Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting again with Brian Lenny, founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review website, also writes a premium newsletter where he shares a lot of the companies that he's investing in and a lot of the ones that he's doing some due diligence on. Brian, I want to first start talking about a company that we have discussed before. They haven't been on the show recently, but that is Cartier Resources. Now, Cartier is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol ECR. And the news that I want to recap with you is the acquisition of the Chalice Gold Mines. That's in Quebec. This brings in the East Cadillac property that is essentially a land package surrounding the company's Chimo project and asset. So there is a defined asset on Chimo. The company now has this much larger land package. It changes the, in a way, outlook for Chimo because of the, well, availability of all this other land. Now, this acquisition is coming off of O3 Mining, and in all fairness, O3 Mining has drilled East Cadillac. They didn't hit, let's say, the same stuff that they were seeing at Chimo within Cartier, but this is a synergy here with a much larger land package that it sounds like you're encouraged about for Cartier to make this acquisition. Take us through some of the points that have you encouraged about this.
Thanks for having me, Corey. I'm very encouraged by the deal that was made this week, or at least announced. To me, it's transformative for Chimo and what it could mean to, you know, an acquirer in the future. In my view, Chimo worked as an underground mine and would be desirable by any senior mining company, especially in that immediate area, to mine and then truck the ore to their mill. There was definitely some question marks over, you know, whether that was possible or not, but I thought it was. Now with this acquisition of the, you know, 20,000 plus hectares in Chalice, or, you know, the East Cadillac project from O3, now you have, you know, a large land package that gives the would-be acquirer numerous options, whether they wanted to put a mill there, although, you know, the permitting might be an issue, or of course, you know, put the ore sorting and truck the ore is definitely still an option. It may be whoever ends up acquiring it or putting it into production, you know, they may still do. But this gives the optionality, you know, plenty of room to mine the ore body and make this thing work. So to me, it is transformative. The other side to it is, if you take a look at some of the ore body pictures, the long sections, you can see that the ore body looks like it expands outside of the property boundary. And so in my view, it opens up numerous, you know, possibilities for resource expansion. And I think that it, you know, especially if the ore is located close to surface, it'll be that much cheaper for them to drill, rather than, you know, why they stopped drilling at Chimo was, you know, you start going deeper than, you know, 600 or 700 meters, and the cost, it ramps up pretty high quickly. So to me, there's low hanging fruit in resource expansion. And then you've got there's an existing resource. I think it's like 300,000 or 400,000 ounces. O3 did take a shot at, you know, expanding that resource, but maybe there's more work that can be done in that realm too. And maybe this thing gets up over 2.5 million ounces relatively quick. You know, I still think that address that they have is the most important thing. And when you get up over 2 million ounces and you're located near Val-d'Or, it's highly attractive.
Well, Brian, in these situations where you see two different assets from two different companies combined into a larger resource, and where you see, you know, maybe the economics and the synergies improve, in this case, a bigger land position to have more flexibility if a larger partner wanted to come in, are you playing it for the re-rating for when they update their economic study and show the combined resource? Or are you playing it for a takeover where this is now a big enough prize that maybe one of the larger producers comes in and says, okay, we could bolt this on as a development project?
So for me, like I said before, I think that Chimo worked regardless of the expanded land package or the ounces that came with that expanded land package. So in my mind, it was, you know, it was an acquirer that was going to buy it, or it being an M&A target that was, you know, at the top of my mind. So what I think, by them expanding this land position, that optionality given to the would-be acquirer is what makes it that much more appealing. And to me, you know, maybe answer some of those questions that may be surrounding, you know, whether it was the project footprint was too small and maybe that 2 million ounces isn't enough. Like I said, I think that they're going to be able to expand the resource, you know, immediately in the, you know, the Chimal region. And therefore those ounces would be accessible to the underground mining operation and therefore increase the economic viability of it. And especially in this environment where we see the gold price going up, I know there's a lot of things going on in the world right now. You got, you know, the war in the Ukraine, but I think that the gold price had a lot of strength in it just because of all the economic and financial problems that we have. And I don't see that changing in the future. So to me, I see a higher gold price in the future. I don't know exactly when that stabilizes or moves forward. But I think in that sort of environment, Chimal now, given its land package size and the, you know, the production rate that it could potentially have, it's going to be highly desirable by especially companies in that immediate area. So I think it's quite interesting. And, you know, is that at or near the top of my list of M&A targets?
Yeah, just the simple increase in the land package, the image or map that is within the Cartier announcement that came on February 28th just shows how much more land the company has right now. Now, you mentioned that, look, it provides some expansion potential in terms of resources. It also provides the potential of an acquirer saying, well, we have more room to work here because of the larger land package. One of the knocks on Cartier has been the fact that the market, just for some reason, has never really put full value into the current resource. And quite frankly, you look at this chart for Cartier and boy, oh boy, it is not a pretty chart. What kind of work do you think it's going to take to draw investors in here? Because quite frankly, just this acquisition, it's not exactly, well, and it hasn't driven a ton of buying into the stock. We did see a high volume day at the tail end when this was announced, but it hasn't driven the stock higher. So work-wise, what's it going to take to really change the perception around this company?
And it's definitely something that any existing shareholder or prospective investor should ask before, you know, or looking at Cartier. I think it's going to play out. I think they'll delay stuff at Fenton. Fenton is drill ready and they can drill that at any time. But with this purchase, I think that it makes sense to carry on with the momentum and, you know, get right to drilling. You know, they've modeled the deposit. My guess is that they've got a pretty good idea of where that ore body probably expands. I think they go after that low hanging fruit, you know, right off the hop. You know, obviously Phil needs to relay this thesis to the market, and then he's got to back it up with results. And I think that there's a lot of potential. Like, do I think this thing is going to roar to a dollar? Yeah, probably not. But I think you definitely go back up into those, let's say the 30 cent mark quite easily if they're able to prove their thesis is correct and that there's room to expand the existing Chimal mine. And I think they can do that in relatively short order without having to raise any more cash. So I think that's one component of it. The second with Fenton, you know, even if it is drill ready, you know, they could wait and drill that in the next fall, or, you know, there's a lot of ways this could actually play out. But then you could also JV Fenton, just like they did with Wilson and Hawk Moon. So there's a number of different ways this can go, and ways that I think that it could drive the share price up and bring back value to investors. But you're very right. You know, what we've seen is that the market doesn't want to give them full value. But there's a lot of developers across the sector that are kind of like this, and the market seemingly doesn't recognize the value until it's like right in front of their face, meaning that, you know, something happens and, you know, the senior mining company basically telegraphs that they're interested in buying this company. One that comes to mind that we were talking to off mic there was Montage, and, you know, what potentially is going to happen with Perseus. You know, in situations like that, you know, Montage was drastically, we were selling at a huge discount to value. And then the indirect Perseus buys Orca and the share price goes up 15%. So, you know, I think that same sort of situation, you know, in some form could potentially happen with Cartier and a number of other developmental companies that are trading at a discount. And then the other side to it is, I think that we're headed into this next leg of the bull market at some point this year. And in that that realm of thinking, I think that, you know, a lot of these better junior companies, Karte being one of them, are going to see a share price appreciation because of it.
Brian, just one more thing on this, and that's how these companies that are development stage get valued and where they're valued now. I would agree. There's a lot of developers that are not even getting a fraction of what their project is worth, even during a normal market. And when you saw Fenton have results at Cartier that maybe didn't please the market, the sell-off was so extreme that it also punished Chimo by default, because it's basically saying that all their projects just dropped in value by, let's say, 50%. And it's interesting that we see that in a lot of these development projects. And then if this, and you just brought up Montage, where they just hadn't been getting much traction, but then Orca gets bought, and then suddenly people realize, oh yeah, there is a lot of value there at this development project at Montage. So do you think that maybe this is a smart strategy for other companies to employ to get more attention back on these development projects, is to do partnerships, to do deals, to do JVs, to do cross a border combination of land packages, just to get analysts looking at how undervalued these development projects are right now?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think there's two components to what you said. First, we talked like the Benoit results last year definitely impacted Cartier's share price. And I think to a ridiculous amount, like if you look at the market cap and you do any sort of calculation on Chimo, I think that, you know, Benoit's results shouldn't have been equal to half of Cartier's market cap. Now, what percentage is proper? It's kind of subjective, but I definitely don't think a miss at Benoit should have dropped the share price or the market cap in half, but it did. And so the other side to it is, you know, this whole idea of combining projects. I think if management companies can make an accretive change that is the best for their shareholders and for the project, I think they should absolutely do it. But I think, you know, these things are always going to be mixed. You know, off mic we were talking, and I think, you know, we covered a number of different examples. And I think in some cases, the combination of projects or companies made a lot of sense because, you know, they could have a central milling station and, you know, the trucking and the stuff would be optimized for costs. And then other deals, I think, that are done just for marketing senses. You know, they're in tough locations with, you know, old historic deposits that have maybe a high number of ounces, but are going to require, you know, very high metal prices to make any sense economically. So I think investors still need to be wary of these sort of deals and make sure that, you know, you when you look at the details of it, that it makes sense. Like there's something that is driving the merger of these companies. Like actually, you know, one of the best examples is in Nevada with the combination of Newmont and Barrick. You know, Nevada Gold Mines has been a huge success, I think, anyways. It shows you how the synergies work. I can't think of a negative one off the top of my head, but I'm sure that there's numerous examples on the other side where the combinations are of just waning companies that combine just to maybe grab headlines and count in investors' mind for at least a short period of time. So, you know, investors still need to be wary. I think in the right situations that combinations are an absolute must in the industry. And I think we're going to see more of it moving ahead.
I agree. But isn't that also a sign of the market that when we did go on that run, it was about 2 years ago now, so many new companies came to the market, so many IPOs, and quite frankly, a lot of those new companies have suffered and continued to suffer, and some of these combinations are simply for the fact of keeping the lights on at one of the companies and trying to give a bit more of a marketing outlook, some sort of marketing angle to them, because a lot of these new entrants and the fracturedness of companies really didn't succeed for a lot of these groups.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's amazing how bull markets bring on mediocrity.
Immediately, too.
Yeah, the market is extremely efficient. And honestly, it's one of those things where, you know, there's people waiting with shells and private companies that are just waiting to hop into whatever metal is hot. And again, it's just another example of how, you know, investors in this sector always need to be wary of what they're investing in and be very picky about where you put your money, because, you know, a lot of these stories also get recycled numerous times and just under different names. So, you know, so some things never really change. But yeah, like exactly what you said, you know, there's a lot of mediocrity that came into the market. And I think that stuff kind of gets unwound, albeit if we are in the second leg, even those companies are going to catch a bid. And unfortunately, you know, share prices will go up regardless of if it's warranted or not. But that's how, you know, markets work, and that's how people learn. So,
Hey, it would be a good environment if we saw everything going up, at least for precious metals investors, because it has been a grind over the last little bit, especially for those in the juniors. But these majors and royalty companies are doing quite a bit better. Hey, Brian, great chatting with you. Nice to have you back on the show. And I think very interesting comments when it comes to this environment where we have seen more companies combine, some for good reasons, some for more desperate reasons. But I think that's important to isolate why these combinations are happening. Brian, thank you, as always, for your time, man. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for having me, guys.